Before I get started today, I wanted to make sure that I gave a big shout out to Jeannie Colwin Coaching. Jeannie Colwin is a stress and mind-body coach based in Los Angeles. She spent 16-plus years battling fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, and a myriad of other chronic symptoms that left her both physically and mentally exhausted. You can listen to her journey from when she first appeared on the pod, episode 188, and that'll be linked in the show notes so you can listen to that easily. After healing herself completely, Jeannie is now obsessed with getting her clients fast results through her one-on-one coaching program. With support, consistency, and accountability, clients learn to stop making pain the problem. It may seem overwhelming to finally address our emotions and make the big changes in our lives. If this is you, Jeannie offers free 45-minute consults where together you'll identify what's holding you back so you can take your next steps towards healing. Go to her website, jeanniecolwin.com. That's JeannieKulwin.com and book your free call today. I want to make sure that I give a big shout out to all of the patrons of the podcast. If you're interested in supporting the show, go to patreon.com/themindedfitnesspodcast. Let me give a shout out to Albert and Jeff, Julie, Albert, Deborah, Daniel, Kirk, Emily, Amanda, Elise, Enda, Dominic, Sasha, John, Jason, Mindy, Irina, Kelly, Tony, Michael, Mike, Christina, Ross, Julie, Brian, Sarah, Arnie, and Barb. Thank you all so much for continuing to support the podcast. Week after week, month after month, and for a lot of you, year after year, continuing to support the show. So as you hear this, as you listen to this, I am in Hawaii. In fact, right now as you're listening to this, have I gone to bed yet? Maybe, or maybe not. So I'm looking forward to a great week. I'm recording this a week in advance, of course, but looking forward to a great week with my family, with my wife, with my girls, Zoe with her broken arm and all that kind of stuff. But she's been such a trooper, and I can't wait to maybe I'll have her on the podcast after she gets that cast off and after she's back to full health and she can tell some of that story. So looking forward to you hearing this week's episode. It's a doozy. And this guy came to me, Alec Kasson, came to me, told me his story. He said he got interested in coaching, doing TMS coaching, and wanted to do some interviewing from people that have recovered. And I just love his story. So without further ado, let's listen to Alec and I. Welcome back to the Minded Fitness Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Eddie Lindenstein. I got a great email or a great message not long ago, another recovery story. One thing that this podcast is very heavy on is female guests, and that's just sort of the way that it is, I guess. So it's cool to sometimes hear from a male that wants to talk about their feelings. So I have Alec Kasson on the line, based out of California. Alec, are you there? Can you hear me?
I am, Eddie. Good to be with you.
Well, I'm excited to kind of dive in today. We'll hear about your story, kind of what's next and on the horizon for you. But I'd love to just know a little bit more about you, you know, what you do for a living, kind of what your background is just as a person, not necessarily in the TMS space, but, who is Alec essentially?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so I'm originally from, Northern California, Marin County, and, grew up there and, went to school, at Berkeley and, was working in tech for a number of years, for 5 years for LinkedIn, actually. And I left, I was splitting my time between San Francisco and Ireland, and left my job, let's see, in the middle of the pandemic, kind of this, you know, pandemic crisis like some people have, and decided that I wanted to do something completely different. I was working in pricing before, and decided to leave and be an entrepreneur and essentially help businesses become more conscious, create more connection in the workplace. So that's kind of my main role outside of the TMS coaching work that I do.
Yeah. Awesome. Hey, so God, like totally small world. I didn't even think about this. So I did a boys trip with a couple of buddies of mine just this past weekend. We got back last night. We left Friday. We got back last night, and it was in San Francisco. And we drove right by the LinkedIn building. Were you at the, so I don't know if there's several campuses or whatever, but we saw the Salesforce building, which was crazy, just in terms of how big it was. Yeah. And then LinkedIn was not too far away from there, and there were a host of other companies. Is that the area that you were in down there?
Yep. I was splitting my time between the office in San Francisco, which you went by, and the campus down in Sunnyvale, which is much more sprawling.
Yeah.
Kind of more in the suburbs.
Yeah, it was crazy. So we saw just like down by the pier, so we saw on the way into town, let's see if I can get all this right. The Ancestry office, the Mozilla office, and then as the weeks went on, we saw the Sony PlayStation office, which I can't even remember. I can't remember where that was. We saw the Nvidia campus, which reminded me of like Stark Industries in the Avengers. And then we saw the Salesforce office, and then we saw the LinkedIn office. And it was like, I mean, I know that that's like Silicon Valley, like that's part of the deal. But Seattle very much is a tech hub, and that's where I'm at. But we don't have the just overwhelming signage, I guess, than Silicon Valley does and San Francisco does. I don't know. They've just done a better job branding, I guess.
Yeah, it's interesting kind of the different pockets of tech. And, you know, I grew up north of San Francisco in Marin, and, you know, there's not as much kind of tech influence up there, but you go down south into Silicon Valley and it's literally everywhere.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting.
I'm trying to even look up where, cause I'm not sure if we talked about this on that conversation we had last week, but I'm looking at a map now. Okay. So this is like San Rafael, like that kind of area, right? Olema.
Yeah. I grew up in San Anselmo, if you want to be really precise.
Okay.
Just west of San Rafael.
Because I was born in Chico, which is quite a bit north. But Northern California, that's where my blood and my origin story is. So looks like we kind of have that similar.
We're kindred spirits that way.
Yeah. For sure. Awesome. Well, so you've got a TMS story and a pretty if we were to just say like pure diagnostics, like a pretty scary one. So tell me, I always think that like people's lives that I interview kind of go in these divergent paths. It's sort of like you have there's the pre-TMS life and post-TMS life, but really where that separation occurs is when did the pain get so bad that life changed for me or I couldn't ignore it anymore? And so that's what I want to know more about.
Yeah. So I'll lead you into leading up to that point, but my story is leading up to being diagnosed with a ruptured L4, L5. And a herniated L5 S1. So back when I was 18, so this was 12 years ago, I wanted to be a professional cyclist. My life revolved around cycling. And I remember this was the time of my career where I had just entered a new category where I was going to be racing alongside professionals. So really amazing opportunity and also pretty scary, right? Yeah. I built my identity around cycling and was kind of afraid of being in this new category. But I was out on a training ride one day and just riding along. And all of a sudden I felt this lightning rod of pain just shoot through my back. It was as if somebody was just like twisting my back, like wringing it like a towel. And the pain was so bad that I actually couldn't sit back down on my bike seat. I had to be just vertical. My spine wouldn't bend. And I went to a chiropractor a few days later, who said, "Oh, don't worry. 2 weeks, you're going to be back on top. You're fine. Summer race season, you'll be able to do all these races, no problem." Well, 2 weeks turned to 4 weeks, turned to 2 months, and pretty soon my pain was not getting better; it was getting worse and worse and worse.
Wait, and sorry. When this happened, did you say it happened as like a physical trauma, or you just sort of woke up and it was there?
It was on a bike ride. Okay. I was just riding along, or JRA as cyclists say, and all of a sudden it was this immense pain in my back, but there was no crash or anything that had happened.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Yeah. Continue.
Yeah. And my thoughts pretty soon turned, I was in pain constantly throughout the day and really just trying to push through it. And my thoughts pretty soon turned to, my gosh, forget about the cycling season. I need to go back to school and be able to sit in a lecture hall. Yeah. At that point, I couldn't sit in a chair without any pain.
Yep.
And I suffered through a semester back at college, which was, I was reclusive. I was depressed and not able to ride. My identity essentially had been ripped from me, Eddie. It's like, I had built my whole identity around cycling, and not being able to do that, kind of everything was crumbling around me. And the moment that really, one of the moments where I realized this was incredibly serious is I had the MRI about 4 or 5 months after the initial injury. And they said, you know, it's a ruptured spinal disc. And of course, that sounds incredibly scary.
Yeah.
And I had a couple of epidural injections. And I remember after the first one, about 2 weeks went by, and I my pain had lessened quite substantially. Then it came back. We did a second epidural, and then the pain came back worse than ever before. And a few days into my second semester, into my spring semester, I decided that I couldn't keep going. I had to withdraw because I was just in so much pain. And that was really the moment when things started to go south for me even further.
Yeah.
I would say.
Yeah. So what, talk about the next part, which cause you said you saw a chiropractor first, right?
Yeah. Chiropractor, PT, tried all the, non MD routes first.
And what were because it is very striking to like go from like a clinical type of a diagnosis to in this regard, seeing an image, like getting the MRI done. What was the mm-hmm. I guess the impressions that more like the physical diagnostics, like what was the impressions right there? Was it, hey, we know right away, or was it like, we're not really sure, we need to do more testing kind of thing?
It was pretty clear. That I remember vividly sitting down with the doctor after we had the results, looking at the MRI, and he said, you know, I can pretty much certainly tell you that this is the cause of your pain. Because wow. You could see in the MRI, it was pretty clear that, you know, the disc was not just moved out into the spinal column, but you could see, like, you know, there was like this bulge, this kind of fluid that was coming off of it.
Yeah.
And so that it was pretty clear that was the case.
Okay.
And of course, that just heightened my fear and all this, the anxiety levels even further.
Yeah. 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 How you said that it kind of started to even get worse or even steamroll a little bit after that. Elaborate a little bit on that.
Yeah. So I remember coming back home. My parents came to collect me from college. And at that point I was laying down, like reclined in a car seat as far as it could go. And I was just unable to essentially put any weight on my spine. And I spent the majority of the next couple months mostly in bed. I was either in bed laying down, or I would stand up to eat my meals. And I was on painkillers and really depressed, and I've seen doctor after doctor, or specialist after specialist, or chiropractor, physical therapist, acupuncturist, etc. And I went through this cycle of, I would go to somebody and I would place so much trust in them. And after a few weeks, we would kind of exhaust all the options. And then they would say, well, in no uncertain terms, like, there's nothing else that we can really do for you.
Yeah.
And it would leave me more dejected each time. And as a, you know, 18, 19 year old, when you're used to being incredibly physically active and you're essentially seeing these professionals that you place trust in say like, well, we know what's wrong with you, but we can't really help you.
Yep.
So dejecting.
Yep.
And I know so many other people can relate to that as well.
Yep. Yep. Did you, one thing that I've always thought about is like, you know, you kind of start with going to a PT or a doctor or a chiropractor, like stuff that's pretty orthodox. And then sometimes people go really outside of the realm and they start kind of seeing the really unorthodox. Did you get into that? Like, did you start going to see a little bit more of the unorthodox or a little bit more out on the peripheral type practitioners, or did you not really go down that route?
I did. So my parents and I, they were incredibly supportive throughout the whole process, but they were encouraging me to exhaust all options. Mm-hmm. So I remember coming home, you know, one day from a doctor's visit, a failed one in my estimation. You know, my dad came into my room and said, hey, we're going to keep going to people until we find the right one that helps you. So I dabbled in guided imagery was actually one that was really helpful.
Okay.
And kind of causing me to look inward. I started to see things that didn't quite make sense about the physical diagnosis that I had been given. And some of the practitioners, or kind of some of the more alternative medicine folks that I was seeing, kind of led me more in that direction as well. And what I mean by that is I would have days where I would be doing everything that, you know, traditional Western medicine said to do, you know, ice your back, be horizontal, don't put too much pressure on yourself, etc. And there'd be days where I'd do that and I'd be in immense pain. And then other days where I would do everything wrong, right? I'd be sitting, quote unquote, too much, or I would be not icing my back, and my pain levels would be much lower. And I started to think, like, wait a minute, there's actually, this doesn't make sense if it were just a physical thing.
Yeah.
And so I think that's, I was open to this idea of alternative medicine or alternative approaches to describe what was happening to me.
So, you know, you're going kind of down this physical model. What did the doctor recommend for you, like having done or getting done or go, like, what's the next step or the next path that's recommended?
Yeah. So at this point where I'm, you know, confined to bed most of the time, the doctor that I was seeing recommended physical therapy. And that actually turned out to be somewhat of a blessing, because he referred me not to a physical therapist who was a believer of TMS and Dr. Sarno, but he actually really taught me not to fear my pain, not to fear my pain. And yeah, that I think is very aligned with, you know, TMS recovery process. But it was essentially, you know, we're going to exhaust the non-invasive routes and try to not have surgery on you as a 19-year-old. So that was, and that was a terrifying prospect for me as well. So I was like, great, let's exhaust everything that is not surgery.
Good for them. How long did you go down this path? And then eventually I want to get to, how did you get introduced to Sarno's book or, and it could be any other book in the field, but how did that eventually make its way to you?
Yeah. So I think the same case for a lot of people, it made its way to me and then it was rejected out of hand. I remember when I was in immense pain, I had somebody come up to me and was kind of broaching the subject of Sarno. And he was saying to me, like, well, do you consider yourself to be an angry person? And I was like, well, no, of course not.
Yeah.
And started to, you know, just explain all this stuff about Sarno. I was like, no way. This is like, I've seen my MRI. I've seen the ruptured disc. Like, thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah. Yep.
So it was about a year and a half from then into the time where I picked up the book again, and it was thanks to my mom, actually, her insistence. And it was after I had actually started to make some recovery through traditional physical therapy, with the approach of not fearing pain if I was having an exercise, a routine. And I remember picking up the book and just seeing myself on every page and recognizing, oh my gosh, this is all the curiosity that I had around, you know, why some days is my pain so much worse, other days it's better. It was an answer to all those questions.
Yeah.
And within a number of weeks, I fully embodied the idea that my pain was psychosomatic, that it was not this physical issue. And much to my amazement, my pain then started to shift from my low back to my mid back. And then I realized, okay, I have it on the run now. And after that, then it spread to my shins. So I started to get really bad shin splints. And I was, at this point, I was back in college. Thankfully, I had, you know, made enough of a recovery where I was taking classes part-time. Still not pain-free by any stretch of the imagination. But I got to the point where when I fully embodied this idea that it was TMS, the symptoms just shifted. Symptom imperative, as they say, struck.
Why do you think, so one hurdle that a lot of people do, like kind of a common story, is that people kind of have this, they read the book, they sort of believe it, but not really. And like, there's just kind of a huge issue. Like, okay, I believe that people's pain could be psychosomatic or be emotionally rooted or whatever, but mine is different for whatever reason. And you're in a really interesting situation where like you saw the imaging, you saw the MRI. So doubt seems like it could be quite a prevalent thing for you. But that's not that doesn't sound like it's the case. What do you think is it about your personality where you didn't have that overarching doubt that so many people tend to have?
That's a great question. I think there was an element of doubt, but what really overcame that over time was just curiosity, just recognizing how asking questions of like, well, why some days is my pain an 8 and other days it's a 3 if I'm doing the same exact thing? Why do some people have a perfect MRI and they're in immense pain?
Yeah.
And so to me, it was this idea of like, what's actually going on there? And I remember just being open to the idea, and this was part of the guided imagery sessions that I was doing, just being open to the idea that my body was much more capable of healing than I was giving it credit for. And this idea that I was getting in my own way, I was kind of creating this. I didn't know it at the time to the extent that that was true.
Yeah.
But I think also I was, Eddie, to be completely honest, I was so desperate for a solution that I was willing to throw myself into anything and be proven wrong. Because at that point I had tried all non-surgical measures to be better. And for whatever reason, the TMS diagnosis really struck me as like, all right, like this makes a lot of sense. Let's roll with it. And let's be vulnerable to the point where I'm going to, if I'm proven wrong, and if it's not the case, then it's not going to be because I didn't try it. It's not going to be because I didn't believe.
So it sounds like it became like the de facto truth. Like, this is the truth, and I'm going to need to have to find, like, someone's going to have to convince me otherwise.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. And also seeing the stories of people who had recovered, right?
Yeah.
You know, people who had ruptured discs who were fully pain-free. And I was thinking, well, if they can do it, so can I.
Yeah.
And I think also, you know, the belief that I had been a competitive cyclist, I had, you know, a relatively fit body, and therefore I was like, well, okay, this, that maybe was on my side as well, of kind of having that youth and that experience of having a body that was able to do physical feats.
Yeah, absolutely. So how long, I guess, like, what kind of comes next? I'd be very curious to hear.
Yeah.
You know, I work in tech. That's my day job. And I know when I read Sarno, it really opened my eyes and kind of had me just kind of thinking about like reevaluating. I mean, it sounds kind of crazy, but like my entire life. So talk about sort of how the process of events that came after that, you know, what did this change? What did this alter for you? You know, that kind of thing. I'd love to get some perspective on that.
Yeah. And this, Eddie, this is where it gets really interesting, because I was in this kind of gray area where I fully believed that it was TMS, and my back pain was essentially either gone away or very low.
Yeah.
But I had this really bad shin pain that was preventing me. I really loved to play softball, especially with my dad, and wasn't able to do that. I wasn't able to go on runs. I would have pain just lying in bed in my shins. But then after a while, I started to think, oh, wait a minute, that must be TMS as well. And then I was on to that. And then my symptoms shifted again into my arm, and then they shifted again, and they kept shifting. And it was almost like my body or my mind or whatever was saying, you are going to keep having these symptoms until you start to look inward at the reason that you're having them. And that's where I started to see that I had all of, you know, Sarno talks about all of the traits of somebody with TMS. You know, they can be perfectionistic, they can be a people pleaser, low self-esteem, a lot of fear, anxiety. That really describes me.
Yeah.
And I was really pushing all of that away, because I was like, nope, if I know that this is not a physical problem, I can just push through it. And it took kind of a reckoning and having all of these different symptoms to say, wait a minute, it's time to look inward. And that's actually when I started to work with a therapist in San Francisco, who really helped me go into the reason that all these symptoms were generated to begin with. And his name was Dr. Clark Grove in San Francisco. And he was a fantastic therapist, and he was trained and specialized in TMS. And I started to see all of the beliefs that I had about not being okay the way I am, needing to be perfect in order for everybody to like me, fear of being alone. I was an only child. I was young for my grade. I was the smallest boy in my grade, and pretty sensitive, if I will say.
Yeah.
And so I grew up kind of with these defense mechanisms in order to survive in that world, really. And it took TMS and really looking inward to see to see those clearly and start to work through them.
If you don't mind my asking, and you can totally say no, what were some of the things that you started unearthing that, you know, were kind of the red flags that maybe kind of started these wheels in motion?
Yeah, 100%. I'm an open book. So I think some of the biggest ones that came up were beliefs of I needed to be better than others in order to feel okay. That I needed to excel. I needed to be seen because I was, as I mentioned, you know, small for my grade. And as a more sensitive kid, you know, sensitivity isn't something that's necessarily prized on a high school baseball team, if you know what I mean.
Yep.
And I started to, I always kind of pushed these traits away from myself. And all of the emotions that were attached with us were essentially the idea that I'm, you know, not good enough, right? It's this kind of self-rejection. And I was just really uncomfortable with the way that I was. And I felt like I needed to excel in order to get people to like me. And so relating it back to my original injury that I had, it was not a coincidence that, as you said, like there was no physical trauma. I was just riding along. But what was happening is I had just entered this new category for the first time where I was going to be racing against people that were much faster than I was.
Yeah.
And that was going to be a big threat to my ego, to my identity as a cyclist, and that I was enough. And so I think that in a roundabout way, and this is one of the deep realizations of my TMS journey, my mind was trying to do me a favor because it knew I was going to not do well in those races and it was going to be a big blow to my ego. And so it was easier to have this physical pain that prevented me from entering those races to begin with than it was to actually go there and really get a reality check about how fast I wasn't.
Gosh, okay, well that totally spun my head around. One thing I just started thinking about, I mean, as you're saying that, is that I've talked about on the show before that I used to very regularly compete in weightlifting competitions. And for some reason, quite often, especially, I was kind of newer to the sport as a competitor in 2013. And then 2014, I was doing competitions every single month for months on end. It went on for probably the first 8 months of that year. And then a few months had gone by, I'd made some really good leaps and bounds in training, but then I would sign up for these competitions and then inevitably, 3 or 4 weeks before, something would happen. I would have a knee injury, I'd have a shoulder injury, I'd have an elbow injury, I'd have something at my wrist or whatever, and I'd have to withdraw. It happened over and over and over again. Probably like, I mean, I bet I had to withdraw from 3 or 4 competitions. And I had always thought that, because these competitions always tended to land in the same kind of months that the end of my sales quarter would land, and I had always tied these instances in with stressful situations at work. But now that you say what you're saying, you know, kind of having kind of this under the surface knowledge that, hey, I'm not going to do as well in these competitions and it'll be a blow to my ego is a way that I've never thought of it before. And that could really be a big part of it. I've never heard anybody say it like that. So like, that's really interesting that you bring that up.
Yeah. And I think, it comes down to the identity, right? Of if you identify as a weightlifter or a bodybuilder or a cyclist or a runner, whatever, threats to that image can be really, really powerful. And so for me, it was I had built my image around being a cyclist, and that's how people knew me. And I was perfectionistic to the nth degree when it came to training, when it came to nutrition, when it came to cleaning my bike, getting prepped for races and all this stuff. And if races didn't go my way, I'd get pretty angry and react in a I'd say childish way or just not a very mature way.
Yeah.
And so knowing that these races were coming up where it was like entering the big leagues, I definitely think it was the fear that was, it was so much easier to say, you know what, I'm going to blame it on this, you know, on this pain or whatever in order to get out of it rather than seeing that ego blow, you know?
For sure. Gosh, it's so that might be one of the highlights of the podcast over the last few months was you bringing up that stuff. I'm curious, have you gotten back to, like, what was kind of your return to activity after you sort of had this realization and kind of blew up everything that you thought that you knew about injuries and about pain? Did you return to doing the things that you were doing before?
I did. And the beautiful thing was I wanted to prove to myself that I was able to race at a really high level again.
Yeah.
And about, it was around 2 or 3 years after I had my initial injury, I did a few races and I realized that I didn't have the same drive to become a professional cyclist as I did before. And that was okay. That was okay. And I still ride. I'm fully pain-free in terms of being able to ride and run and living an unrestricted life. And it was, I was able to close the chapter on that elite level of competition and really be okay with it because I knew that there was something else for me.
Yeah.
But you know, to this day, the other interesting thing talking about physical activity, Eddie, is one of the biggest perspective shifts that I had as a result of this whole process was seeing that my body was so much stronger than I ever thought it was.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is even though I was a cyclist and I was, you know, riding my bike 20 hours a week, running never was my jam. I would always, you know, I'd run a few miles, but I'd feel it was kind of like pulling teeth. And I had this belief that I only uncovered years later that my body just wasn't capable of running, even though I could go on a, you know, 80, 100, 120 mile bike ride. And I just remember seeing, and this was as a result of some of the inner work that I had been doing, not just around TMS, but around limiting beliefs in general, that I was telling myself that I wasn't a runner, telling myself that I wasn't able to do things like, you know, run a marathon or a half marathon or whatever. And I decided to just like one day go out and run about 10 miles up a mountain and back.
Yeah.
And I had this beautiful moment of on the run, I was thinking, wait, if I'm not worried about whether my body can do this or not, what do I actually think about? What do I actually put my mind on? And it was this beautiful realization of like being able to let go and realize that I had another example of creating the cage for myself and breaking free from it, which I think is, as we see with TMS, like we've essentially created this ourselves. So yeah. To answer your question, been getting more into fitness, not from a perspective of needing to do it to be enough to have a certain body or to have a certain image, which was very strong for me as a cyclist, being probably unhealthily thin, but really actually from a space of love for my body and enjoyment of the activity itself. And that's sometimes something I still struggle with.
Yeah, I definitely hear that. I hear that fine line. I'm like in a period of time of cutting weight a little bit, but only for the purpose of performing better in the sport. And yeah, trying to not get into the headspace of this is for vanity or this is for anything other than in order to achieve athletically some of the things I want to achieve, which by the way, sometimes might just include, I mentioned before we started rolling that I coach girls soccer, just feeling more agile in the coaching process and explaining drills and stuff like that, where in the most recent season, I didn't necessarily feel as agile or as athletic as I would want to. But again, having it be to a place of love and not as much as coming from a place of fear, if that makes sense.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's the biggest shift in terms of TMS, like shifting from fear to love. And it's a paradox because that same activity, you know, cutting weight or wanting to, you know, be more agile or just be more fit, you know, you could do that from a space of fear or love, a place from I'm not enough or I'm doing this because this is something I want to create. And so that same activity, it really comes down to how we see it. And much more deeply, it comes down to are we, you know, doing this to fill a void because we feel like we're not enough.
Yeah.
Right. And yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, speaking of shifts, you sort of upended a little bit and you're doing stuff or you're you're going to begin doing, or maybe you've begun already, doing work in the TMS space. We've got a couple minutes left. I'd love to hear about what it is that you're working on now and kind of where you see the next few weeks, months, and years roll on for you as it relates to this.
Yeah, absolutely. So I knew when I was 18, I was like, you know, if I ever get out of this predicament, I want to be able to help people do the same thing.
Yeah.
And I, for a number of years, that was on the back burner. I, you know, spent a number of years at LinkedIn. I was a manager there. And when I left, I knew that I wanted to do something around, you know, mindfulness and empowering people and coaching. And it wasn't until I came across the TMS Mind-Body Syndrome coaching program with the Mind-Body Food Institute that's run by Miriam, who of Pain Outside the Box, who I know has been on your show a couple of times.
Yep.
It wasn't until I discovered that I really just had this spark of, okay, it's time to do this work. So I went through her amazing training program and spent a year doing a couple different coaching certifications. And now I'm out in the world helping people become pain-free, become chronic condition-free, and live their best lives. And so for me, it's this has always been something that's just been deeply, deeply personal. And I know nobody really knows how debilitating a chronic injury can be until they have one, right?
Yeah.
I was in a space in my life where it was people around me just didn't understand, and it was hard to communicate that. And now I'm doing coaching for people who want to take back control of their lives, who know that a pill or a procedure or a physical device isn't going to heal them, right? People who are ready to do the inner work necessary in order to become pain-free. And so that's where I see my role shifting more and more over the next, you know, months and years into this space to help people make these transformations. Because I know in my experience, it would have gone a whole lot faster. I would have come out the other side if I had more helping hands.
What do you feel is your kind of your unique offering when it pertains to this? Because there's a lot of options out there for coaches or people that somebody that's listening to this right now could call and reach out to and get help from. Like, what is it about you and your story and your offering that you think would set you apart?
Yeah, Eddie, that's a great question. I think two things. One, the fact that I've been there, right? I've been close to becoming addicted to painkillers because I had this pain. I've been close to, you know, I had suicidal thoughts when I had my injury in my darkest moments. I know how scary and how traumatic that this whole process can be. So I think that's that first element of having gone through it. I feel like I can deeply empathize with people who've been there. I think the second element, though, is I'm not just interested in helping somebody become pain-free, but to transform their lives in the same way that TMS symptoms, you know, my journey was shifting from wanting to become pain-free and get my life back to really looking inward and making a deep transformation in myself.
Yeah.
And that's what I've been focused on day in and day out personally since I came across TMS, is this deep inner learning and this wisdom. And so for somebody who is interested not just in getting rid of this pain, but also to the point that they are making a deep personal inner transformation, getting rid of anxiety, reaching their dreams, living the life that they always wanted, that's what I offer.
Awesome.
And those are the folks that I want to work with.
Awesome. Thanks so much for being here, Alec. I really appreciate your time. Maybe let's down the road, maybe we do a part two, like we get, you know, 4 or 5 or 6 months or whatever down the road. Keep in touch. If there's anything I can answer or help, really enjoyed your story and some of your perspective, which is totally blew my mind. And I'll be excited to hear kind of how the next few months shake out for you.
I appreciate that, Eddie. Cool. The last thing I'll say to everybody out there is if they want a bit more information about me or even just want to get in contact, ask any questions, you can reach me at alekkassin.com, alekkassin.com.
Awesome. Cool. All right. Thanks again, Alec. Appreciate you being here.
Thanks, Eddie.
Okay. Take care.